Hello, I'm glad you could join me today. Over the course of K-Days, for a three-day period, we were invited to run our Shift podcast live in the Innovation Zone hosted by Explore Edmonton, Technology Alberta, and other partners. And it was a great time, got to meet lots of innovators, inventors, and some students who are doing some great work. This is episode one. Sit back, settle in. Welcome to Shift at K-Days. Well, hello, gentlemen and ladies. Welcome back. I'm John Hagen with Alberta Innovates, the Shift podcast. And this week, and for the last couple of hours, we've been interviewing entrepreneurs and innovators about their innovations and their experiences and journeys as entrepreneurs. And none have blown me away quite like this next guy. He's a bundle of positivity and energy, and he's very inspirational. So Jean Bruce, why don't you come up and join me? Here, you can have a microphone so we don't have to share.
Can you hear me?
That's always a bit weird.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah. So Jean Bruce is with a company called Elev Homes. And now I'm not going to describe it because that would be ridiculous. You're right here. Why don't you describe Elev Homes and then let's dive into it.
Sounds good. John, thank you so much for the introduction. I really appreciate it. And good evening, everyone. So like John said, my name is Jean Bruce. I'm the co-founder of Elev. And what we're doing with Elev is we are building an ecosystem for student living, starting with the way they go about looking for housing and living off campus. And how we do is essentially we streamline the whole renting process so that students have the ability to look for a place to stay, find a place to stay, book a viewing, and even pay the rent all through the platform. And our goal really is to ensure that all students are able to find affordable, safe, and secure housing so that they can focus on what they're here to do, which is achieve academic success. So that's pretty much the story of Elev.
I love it. That's cool. So now you started Elev when you were in school.
Yes.
And you're out of school now?
Yes.
So how did that work? Was it an experience you had? And then you went, there's a gap in the system. I got to fill that?
Yeah. So essentially how it happened is it was about 5 years ago when I moved to Canada. Now, I moved to Canada from across Africa to come and pursue my studies here. And it was my first time moving away from my family, first time living alone, first time moving to Canada, first time experiencing the Canadian winter. And let me tell you something. Going from from 30 degrees to minus 30 degrees is a different experience.
Yeah, that whole 60 degree jump is it's pretty shocking.
Exactly. So everything was brand new to me. And even when I moved here, when I moved here, I had to find a place to stay that was affordable for me because, number one, as international students, you can imagine how much the international student fees are. So living on campus wasn't really an option for me. And so I had to find a place to stay off campus. And taking from February, when I got accepted to university, until about August, I was looking for a place to stay online. So all the Facebook marketplace, Kijiji, RentFaster, you name it. I was just applying and couldn't find a place to stay. And even when I got here, it was a new culture. It was a new environment. My first time in university. And the thing is that I was expected to know everything when, it's my first time learning about it, right?
You're just a kid.
Exactly.
Yeah, just leaving your country, leaving what you're comfortable with, going somewhere new. And I just wanted to say, too, when international students come, Canadian students, naturalized students, we have our university is not paid for, but it's subsidized. It's heavily subsidized. International students, it's not subsidized.
Yes,
it's so not. You come and you're paying, it's a lot of dollars to go to a Canadian university in post-secondary.
100%. And the thing is that what happens is when you move across the country, and when you come to international students, it's as if your parents were investing in you, right? Because they could have bought this house or invested in the business or whatever, but they chose to send me away so that I would eventually have a better future. And so there's all this pressure and all these different things that are on my shoulders that I have to essentially address. And so when we came and I went through this journey, finding a place to stay off campus and getting accustomed accustomed to the new culture, I figured that there had to be a better way of doing things. Like, why is it so challenging for me, or even for newcomers, for students even, to find a place to stay off campus and even to have like a stress-free experience when living off campus?
Sure, yeah.
And so me and two other of my co-founders, we came together and we figured, look, there had to be a better way of doing things, and we came up with Elev. And I have a question for you.
Sure. Actually. All right.
What do you think? How do you think we came up with the name Elev?
Elev, now when I think about elevate, elevate people's opportunity to find safe, affordable housing. Am I close?
Not quite. But I'm going to use that from now on, right? But Elev essentially comes from the French word, which means students. And student in French is Elev.
Oh, yeah.
And you take out the E and you have Elev. And essentially it was an app built for students by students.
I'm ashamed to say I took my first 6 years in French immersion and I should have known that.
Exactly.
So, okay. So now you're in school. This is your first year.
Yep.
You're figuring things out. You're figuring out the culture. You're trying to find a place to stay. Where were you staying as all this was happening?
Yeah, I was staying off campus, actually, close by university.
Okay, just like finding places you could rent? And
yeah.
Okay, so you're staying, but you're still going, okay, so this is a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah.
So your were they classmates, your business partners, are they classmates, or how did that all?
So for the business partners, it was actually funny. It was a mutual friend that put us in touch.
Okay.
So my friend was telling me about, like, oh, I have this one friend that he's doing this business, and this is what he's looking into. And like, I'm like, all right, okay, that's pretty cool. But like, can you tell me more about it? And the more we talked about it, the more I was like, oh, wow, like, I went through something similar.
Okay.
And then, like, me personally, so I'm mostly very interested into, like, the numbers. So I'm a numbers guy. And so when he told me the idea, I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool, but can I see the numbers? And so he showed me, like, he was like, okay, bro, I'm going to show you this, but you're not supposed to tell him that I'm showing you this. And so I took a look at it. I'm like, okay, that's pretty interesting. I see what you have going on here, but I think, what if we tweak this and change this thing and that thing? And it was like, okay, I'll put you in touch with the person that essentially had the idea.
Okay.
And you guys can talk it out. And then when we met, it was like, yep.
So this is still at the ideation phase, where you're looking at numbers and throwing things around.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you get to the point and you go, okay, there might be something here.
Yeah.
What's the next step?
The next step is essentially testing out our idea.
Testing out the idea. Yeah.
But before we even got to testing the idea, we sort of like talked to students.
Okay.
Right? That essentially went through something similar. So we talked to other international students. We talked to other students living off campus. We even talked to our own landlords, right? Because they also had trouggle finding the right tenant for their property.
Right.
And there's one thing that we also noticed is that, like, there's like the whole stigma as a landlord, there's a stigma around students being either irresponsible or they would party a lot or they would even pay the rent, right? But the thing there are many students like me and like other students that I know that are very serious about their studies. They are very serious about their future. And all they want to do is just come back home, eat, sleep, and then go back to campus. So they don't have time to like have all these different negative attributes that's given to them, right?
The extracurricular activities. I opened a water there for you.
Thank
the
you
extracurricular
so
activities are sometimes what creates those stereotypes.
Yeah.
A, of teenagers being lazy and partiers, and students as being partiers and maybe aren't. Well, Animal House, that movie didn't make didn't help. Okay, so you start to test. You start to look at your demographic.
Yeah.
You start to ask them questions.
Yeah.
So now you're taking all this information in, synthesizing all this information. Yeah. When do you get to the point where you're like, we got to make a prototype, whatever the prototype looks like?
Yes. So when we have all these different conversations and trying to like understand what is the current solutions that are out there, what are the problems that our students are seeing, one of the co-founders actually has a background in tech.
Okay.
So he sort of like, I want to say, spearheaded the MVP, so the initial prototype.
Okay.
And the cool thing that we had is that there were other students that were also interested in like the idea that we're putting together. And so some of the students that were in computer science and software engineering accepted to volunteer with us as we were sort of like building the
opportunity for them
exactly
to participate in building a prototype.
Exactly. And the way we framed it was that we framed it as a project, right? So that you can come in, use your skills to essentially help students find housing off campus. And so that's when we came together, we put together the prototype, and it was pretty interesting because we worked. I remember we went on for like weeks and even like months just putting together this prototype. And when we launched it, because we went out and were like, okay, it's ready for launching. When we launched it, I remember we got a total of 20 downloads. 12 of those were our friends, and 8 of those were friends of our friends.
So, okay, you got 20 people.
20 people.
20 people signed on. Mm-hmm. 12 of them were friends.
Friends, yeah.
And the rest were like friends of friends. So it's, you know, and this is the thing about business, if I can interject, and from what I understand. So you've kind of walked us through the process. Yeah. A, you get an idea, you realize there's a void in the market.
Yeah.
There's a gap here you look to fill.
Yeah.
And then you start to talk to other people that notice the same gap. You start to brainstorm ideas.
Yeah.
And then you come up with something, and then you bounce, before you build anything, bounce that idea off people that could be potential customers.
Exactly.
The students and the landlords.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Now it's validating at every stage. Mm-hmm. So now you go, okay, we got something here.
Yeah.
Now let's build something. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're using your network because you guys aren't flush and loaded with cash to go
and
buy, you know, hire a designer, hire some coders. So you're using the people you know.
Yeah.
To build the tech. So now you've got the tech, you've launched it, and you have 12 friends and 8 of their buddies.
8 of their buddies, yeah. And the thing is that we actually expected to have so much more people sort of like interacting with the platform, right? And we only got 20 of those. And it was sort of like a humbling experience for us, because one thing that we noticed is that when we had this launch around the 20 downloads, we realized that a lot of the features, a lot of the things that were implemented into the platform were based on our honest assumption. The reason why I say that is because remember how I said at the beginning we were talking to customers and then trying to get a sense of what the problem were? When we stopped having those conversations from that moment until we launched the product, there was no customer interaction. So it was just us.
Our own assumptions. Let me put it, just to interject you real quickly, because earlier we were talking about artificial intelligence, right? And the whole thing with artificial intelligence becoming so pervasive, and what worries some people, and they want us to think us, they want people to think more about is those biases you're talking about. Yeah. So when you're building an artificial intelligence, you got to make sure it doesn't have those biases.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you guys use AI? Are you going to be incorporating that at any point?
So
I'm jumping ahead here. Then we'll jump back. We'll go back.
No problem. And I'm actually glad that you mentioned that, because we are actually going through a program with Amy.
The Alberta Machine Intelligence Institute.
Exactly, yeah.
Third best in AI organization in the globe, by the way, here in Edmonton.
You should definitely check it out. Definitely check it out. And we're actually going through it. So like that's actually very, very good that you mentioned. And we had thought about the idea of actually incorporating AI into the platform. And the reason, the place where we see AI being super useful for us is in the matching process. Now, one thing I didn't mention as I was going through the description of Elev is, what we do is that when the student gets to the platform and they open the app, they can sort of like put the different criteria that they look for in a property. And then the algorithm matches them with the best possible listing on the platform.
Oh, okay. So you're asking a series of questions.
Yeah.
So the student can self-identify what he or she or they are like.
Yep.
And then your algorithm then goes, this matches to this sort of landlord.
Exactly. Okay. This sort of like property, and then different matches based on the criteria that the students tell us. Now, going back, right? You know how I told you that we hadn't talked to students for a long time, and then we launched the product?
Yeah.
We realized that, okay, we hit a wall and things are not going the way they're supposed to go. What are we doing wrong? And when we did that retrospective analysis, we realized that, we have not even incorporated the customer as we were building the platform. And from there, we did a whole 180 and we told them, yes, we need to go out there and talk to our customers and make sure that they are at the center of the product development. And so we went out there, and for every feature that we were releasing, for every new service that we're adding, we essentially validated through the customer first. Is that something that you actually take your wallet out of your pocket, remove your card, and actually pay for it? If not, we're not going to waste time building that platform.
Right. So now that's a process you do every time you're iterating.
Yes.
Is go back and talk to your customers.
Yes.
Okay. That's the key there too, is build something that there's a gap, build something for a customer.
Yes.
Because, you know, a lot of people can build something. There's an innovation. They have an idea. Mm-hmm. But they get so hung up on their idea. Yes. They get so passionate about their baby.
Yes.
That they forget about the customer. Oh, and they just keep building it. And then all of a sudden, you go to release it. And it's like, well, there's no customer for it because it's not really customer-centric. It's idea person centric.
Exactly. And you know, we went through a program at Edmonton Unlimited. Mm-hmm. It's called the Propel. And one thing that we learned through Propel is that, and I think I remember it was one of the sessions that they said, and it really stuck to me, is that don't fall in love with the solution, fall in love with the problem.
Right. Okay.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to fall in love with the solution, because the thing is that with the when you fall in love with the solution, you sort of close your mind to all those different potential opportunities, right? You don't want to listen to the customer or to the other feedback that you receive, because like you believe that your solution is the right solution,
right?
When it's not all the time,
right?
And only you can only find out whether the solution is a good solution if you talk to the people that are having these problems, and you talk to them, have those conversations, and they will literally tell you what's wrong. And one thing that we also did that was actually pretty very humbling experience was we put together a support line.
A support line?
Yeah, support line, so that whenever the students or the landlord will have an issue on the platform, they'll reach out to us. And when I tell you, before I even get to it, I think one of the most underappreciated jobs is working in customer service.
Oh, hallelujah. Yeah, I've done
because
that for a few years.
Yeah. When I tell you the things that the customers told us, one customer even told us, literally, you guys should wrap it up, close your business, and just stop doing what you're doing. Because I hate this platform. I just don't like it at all.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And we heard so many of those. And you know, the thing that I appreciated about those experiences is that at first, like, you take it personal because it's your baby. Like, I work so many hours on it trying to bring this to life. And then this one person that I have no idea who they are come up and tell me that, your idea sucks. Just stop it. Like, just completely stop it. Right? It was really very, 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 like, humbling.
Yeah.
It did hurt. But it also sort of like helped me look at things differently from a different perspective, in the sense that why is this person or why is this customer telling me this about the product? So what I did was, one, they tell me like, your product sucks. I don't like it. I hate it. You should stop it. Okay, you're right. What about the product sucks? What aspect of the product makes you feel that way? Mm-hmm. And then when you start having this conversation, asking them and digging deeper, you come out to realize that, I was clicking on this one button, it wasn't getting me to where it's supposed to get to.
Right.
And so, because the one thing that I really want to get done today is not working, and I get to talk to someone that's in charge of that platform, then I can unload everything on you. But when you look at it deeper, it's sort of like the app wasn't working the way it was supposed to, or there was a bug. But because you were the first person that you could talk to, they would just unload everything on you. And so one thing I've learned from that experience is that looking at things from a different perspective will definitely help you sort of like address a lot of issues and sort of like address that problem and find a solution that will essentially match the needs of your potential customers.
You know what's cool, though, is when I think about entrepreneurialism, when I talk to entrepreneurs like yourself, and they talk about the successes and the failures, a lot of what you guys are navigating through, these are just natural human experiences that can translate into all sorts of different aspects of our lives, right? Because we've all dealt with someone coming up to us and saying, come on, you're lame, or your product is lame.
Yeah.
You know, and oftentimes, you know, we take it very personally.
Yeah.
Well, especially when it's directed to us. But, you know, you have to pick yourself up. You have to rebound from it, right?
Yeah.
So it's probably good to have a network around you, too.
Yeah.
You know, because like I said, you've got a moment where you're hanging your head.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to fold the towel or, you know, throw in the towel and give up, well, then you're defeated right from the outset.
100%.
So when it speaks to kind of the entrepreneur mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So Jean-Bruce, when you think about the entrepreneurial mindset,
mm-hmm.
I can say what I see in you, mm-hmm. but what do you think the entrepreneurial mindset is? What are like the three essential things besides money that an entrepreneur needs to have?
Money, you always look, as an entrepreneur, you're always looking for money, always fundraising, right? So the top three trait I would say an entrepreneur should have, number one, I would say resilience.
Yep.
Right? Okay. Because it will get challenging. It will get tired. There would be long nights. There would be a lot of no's, a lot of like, they will come at you from different angles. But you need to stay focused on the objective, on the vision, and believe that that no that I got is a step closer to the potential yes. And just build that resilience and build that mindset in the sense that it's going to get challenging, but I can make it happen. This person did it. I can do it. The second thing is perspective, right? Personally, and this is something that I tell pretty much like everyone that I meet. Mm-hmm. Number one, failure is guaranteed. Like in this, like this is something that everyone needs to know and needs to accept that like failure is guaranteed. But the way I see failure is an opportunity for me to learn. Because one thing about me is that I don't think I ever lose. I either win or I learn.
Win or learn.
Win or learn. Okay. Never lose. Never lose. Sorry? It's a lesson. That's an opportunity for you to learn, you know? It won't always go the way you want things to go, but certain things are meant to happen in order for you to get where you need to be, right? Keep going. That's all I think.
And to your point too, you're talking back to your customer. You're figuring out what they need. If you're losing from your customer's perspective, they're going to help you refine your product.
100%. And the thing is that, like you said, right? From the losing perspective, it's in the sense that everything that your customer tells me, your app is bad, is actually customer discovery. Right. I want to tell you, like, this is bad. This sucks. What about this sucks? And what demographic is this person coming from to like essentially like, be like, okay, you're from this demographic. This is why this part will suck for you. Right. And hey, when you look at the bell curve. There you go. Right. You have like different people at different stages.
Right.
And some of them, like for example, when you have like this new fresh tech from the beginning that's coming to disrupt the industry.
Yep.
The laggards will hate it. But the innovators will love it.
Right. Yeah. There's always this group of like the first adopters.
There you go.
They're early on. Mm-hmm. And they'll just grab on. But there's always that group that will never adopt anything.
Never.
There's always something negative about it. And you can appeal to that group. But there's the movable middle.
Yeah.
And that's with everything, I think. Okay.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And if you think about it, that's how it was with like even cars when they first came up, or the social media, the telephone number, telephones, all of that. At first, many people were against it until it became like it was something established, and then they bought into it, right? And so, just to get back to my point, like
so resilience, perspective,
and the last thing is honestly, you need to love what you're doing.
Yeah,
like you just need to love it. Like you need to have the passion for it and the drive for it, because it will not always be rainbows and sunshine. Like it won't always be the yeses and all of that. Right. You will get a lot of no's. It will get challenging, but at the end of the day, as long as you know that I enjoy what I'm doing and I love it, and no matter what happens, I will still keep going, you'll be essentially will have like all the success that you're looking for.
You know, and when you talk about, you mentioned Edmonton Unlimited earlier. Now, when you think about people, and let's say you're not doing any sort of entrepreneurial innovative work, you're doing your 9-to-5 job. We hear a lot of people don't like their 9-to-5 jobs, and that's fine. If anybody's thinking about getting into entrepreneurialism, there's a ton of support in Alberta. And when we talk about Edmonton, you've got an idea. There's an organization like Edmonton Unlimited that can help you take that idea, whatever that idea is in technology, and help you start to move it forward. 100%. And then there's organizations like Alberta Innovates that help. Technology Alberta is there to help support in part of the ecosystem as well. Mm. It's a huge system and it's a unified system. Mm. And there, you know, all these people are there to help. There's coaching, there's access to capital, there's a larger community. Yep. So the whole idea of a solopreneur or somebody goes, you know, I've got an idea, but I have no idea what to do with it.
Yeah.
Start with, you know, some of those early stage places like Edmonton Unlimited.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. And, you know, even with Elev, like that's essentially how we started, right? When we had the first idea of, okay, this is what we want to do with Elev, we actually went through the Student Founders Program that's put together by Edmonton Unlimited. And actually, by the way, they had a great demo yesterday with like the Student Founder Program that essentially came up and pitched their idea in front of the crowd here, actually here on this stage.
Oh, they did a pitch?
They did a pitch, yes, yesterday. And it was really cool to watch some of those people come up and tell the idea had, which was really interesting. And so, yeah, no, we did go through the Student Founders Program. We went through Propel. We went through even like a bunch of other accelerator programs. The stuff like gave us that support, yep. right? That network to sort of like, okay, let's test out this idea. Let's make sure that we can implement those different features. And most importantly, let's rely on each other to sort of like grow each other's businesses, right?
So entrepreneurs are always there kind of to support one another. Thank you. You know, there's other things that go on in the ecosystem. There's an organization called Startup TNT.
Yes.
Every Thursday night, they have a meetup downtown on 104th Street. Mm. And you don't have to be an entrepreneur. You don't have to be an angel investor. You just have to have a willingness to go down and have a beer or a pop and hang out and meet some other meet some entrepreneurs, meet some people who might be interested in investing and just learning about what's going on.
100%.
So what keeps you up at night with your business? And second, are you guys making money now? When are you retiring?
So what's keeping me up at night? Well, right now, we're actually in the process of expanding across Alberta. And so the work of the expansion is pretty much keeping us up at night in the sense that having those building of different partnership, that network, and like running a network to essentially help us support that expansion across Alberta. We are also looking to expanding across Canada.
Right.
And so there's a lot of like communication that's happening right now.
North, south, east, west.
North, south, east, west, yes. The vision for ELEV is that no students ever has to worry about finding and living off campus while they attend university.
That's right? Cool.
And so whatever it takes us to get there is whatever we're going to do to essentially get us there. So that's essentially what's keeping us up at night. And in terms of generating revenue, we're actually piloting revenue.
Piloting revenue. What does that mean, piloting revenue?
What that means is the way we have built ELEV is that there are different stages, right? Like when you go through the funnel. So when you come into when you first interact with the platform as a student, you are browsing for the properties that are available. Then you have the communication with the landlords. So whether it be for viewing or an application, then you either go for a viewing or you submit an application. When you submit an application, you can like essentially sign the lease. When you're moving, you start paying the rent. And so through the different accelerator programs that we went through, we were able to sort of like get those different pieces of the funnel in place. Now the last piece is essentially the paying the rent part. So like the revenue part. And what I mean by that is that we actually have a cohort of users that we have onboarded, so essentially selected to sort of like test out those different pricing strategies that we have in place.
Ah, okay.
And then from there, we can sort of like determine what's the accurate price to charge and what services to provide.
Ah, I see.
So
okay.
That's what we're doing right now. And we were fortunate enough to actually be a part of, get accepted into the Digital Traction Program from
Digital
Alberta.
Traction from, yeah, go. Yeah, okay.
From Alberta Innovate, where we essentially had access to capital to help us test out those different strategies, which is also something keeping us up at night.
lots of things keep you up at night, hey?
Yeah. Exactly. So we have a lot of long nights. But yeah, no, the app is launched. We've launched here in Edmonton. We're also, like I mentioned earlier, launching in Calgary and across Alberta. And can't wait to see what the future holds.
That's awesome and very exciting. We got to wrap it up, but ladies and gentlemen, John Bruce Koa from ELEV Homes.
Yes, sir.
And if people want to check out the website and see what it's all about, what's the URL?
The URL? ELEVHomes.ca.
ELEV,
ELEVHomes.ca.
Yes. Made in Alberta company, and a pleasure chatting with you.
Pleasure talking with you, John. Always a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for joining in today. Make sure to check us out online at shift.albertainnovates.ca or on any one of your favorite streaming services. And make sure to check out Inventures 2024. We've got some great features on right now until September 1st, 2024.